Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
Oh, hello and welcome to Tech Talk. It's me, Stephen Scott, back with you again. Sorry. And we have, as always, Robin Christofferson here from AbilityNet. Hi to you, Robin.
Hi, Stephen. Hi, everybody.
Now, we don't have Tim or Andy with us this week because this week they have given up their seats, very kindly given up their seats to make way for two very special guests. And I'm really pleased to have with us from the Technology for Life team here at RNIB, we've got Madeline Bloom and we've got Ben Rendell. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
Are the seats still warm?
They are, yeah. I can pretend to be Andy if you want. I don't have a working pair of eyes, though.
Oh, well, that's just not going to work then, is it? No. Well, you may have guessed, dear listener, that we're not going to get to the emails this week. Don't email in and complain. I can only apologise. But look, we've got lots to talk about this week. And we're actually focusing this week a little bit in a special way, I guess, around lockdown. Because we've kind of touched on this topic from time to time on the show. But I thought, considering it's now exactly a year since we went into lockdown, and pretty much a year to the day that I remember coming into my room here, into my little office, which had a different desk, which had a different computer sitting on it. It was quite a different setup, actually, to where it is today. And then realizing I was going to be working from home for, you know, who knows how long. And you know, a lot of people thought at the beginning it would just be a few weeks, maybe a few months. And then it became clear to us that we were not going to get back anytime soon. And, you know, a lot of us adapted our home setups. We changed our ways of working. We had to learn new systems. And we want to get into all that. And I think, you know, one of the reasons I was so keen to get Madeline and Ben on is because I want to really know how this has affected you guys personally. And also what your experiences have been, what the conversations have been from the blind community during this whole time. Because I can only imagine the types of conversations and questions you guys must have been asked. And I just think it'd be really good to talk about that. And then a bit later, I want to talk about the coming out of lockdown. What's next? Will everything go back to normal? Are we moving towards a more remote working environment? Is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? What about people who, you know, have perhaps found this difficult? Are they going to be pleased at this? Or are people finding that they love going to events virtually? So therefore, you know, the idea of an event happening in a physical location now might be off-putting, because they prefer the virtual. So I think there's lots to talk about, lots to unpack. I don't think any of us will have a problem getting through this hour. I could probably just do it. I could monologue it myself probably if I really wanted to. So let's start with Madeline, because I want to kind of get into our personal takes on this first. How has lockdown been from a technical perspective? And, you know, look, from a personal perspective as well, how's it been for you?
Oh, to be honest, I was dreading it a little bit when it started because I quite like the social interaction when I go out, when I travel to work, when I meet colleagues and friends. And I thought, how will it be if you are at home all day, every day, 24/7, plus homeschooling free children? I really did not know how to handle this in the beginning. But I must say, having done this now a year on and off with homeschooling, I must say there were a lot of advantages as well. I have a bit more time on my hands every single day because I don't travel to work. And technology-wise, I think a few things have become a lot more aware of technology, like school. They don't want any papers anymore to sign. We can do it all online, which is great for us parents with a vision impairment. And any other things that we do socially as well, as in virtual events and such, it's to be honest, I think it's, for me, it's been, a lot of it has been a great advantage that I like looking back now and think, well, you know what, it wasn't the worst year at all that I spent. It was different, definitely different, but I've spent a lot more time with technology here that I normally don't really get to do before. And then there's a great advantage to see people at home more than I normally do. So, you know what? It could have been a lot worse.
I get that sentiment for a lot of different people. And I think that point you make about schooling and technology around schooling, a lot of us don't really understand that because we're not necessarily involved. We know that perhaps our kids are using more technology at school. We knew that anyway, but it was the specifics, wasn't it? And interestingly, Ben, one of the things we talked about, you and I had talked about specifically, was the calls to the RNIB helpline that were happening, you know, from parents who perhaps had never been faced with a Braille display before, and certainly, you know, how to restart JAWS when it stopped working, or, you know, whatever the screen reader was that people were using. So, you know, from your point of view, you know, let's talk a bit about that, but also your own take on lockdown.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, there were lots more parents who were adjusting to that homeschooling setup, and like you said, you know, asking questions like, how do I do this with this Braille display, or, you know, what does this mean when JAWS does this, because they just didn't have access to the on-site IT support, and, you know, schools had just completely closed, and, you know, they just didn't know where to go. But, you know, we've been able to provide that support, fortunately. I mean, for me personally, when I first saw that announcement, we'd been working from home for a couple of weeks prior to that, and I kind of thought, oh, this is all going to blow over in a few weeks. It's a storm in a teacup, to coin a phrase. And obviously not. And seeing that announcement, it was just, it meant a lot to me because, you know, personally, for example, my son doesn't live with me, lives in London, so I was kind of automatically thinking, you know, what's that going to mean for me seeing him? But fortunately, you know, that the government quite quickly clarified the situation on that, so I was quite lucky that I've still been able to see him and things. But from a technology point of view, you know, it's just proved, like, online meetings, I think we just all got a bit sick of them now. Like, before, you did it because it was a convenience thing, but now it's just every day, like Zoom, Teams, whatever it might be, just constant.
This is a funny one, because people join Zooms and Teams meeting left, right, and center, and I get so many social invites, which most of the times I have to decline because I do so many social meetings at work that in the evening I think that I don't really want to be in Zooms or Teams now because I do it all day long. So.
Well, yeah. You even get people now who meditate via Zoom as well. I don't know how that's possible. I mean, I know I get it, but I think at the end of the day, the last thing I want to do is open up Zoom, right? I mean, it's just that's all I'm doing all day is opening up Zoom and Teams and all these things.
Even like my mum, who's not great with tech, you know, I remember getting a call from her and saying, oh, what's this Zoom thing all about? And then, you know, the next thing I know, she's doing her choir sessions via Zoom. And I was like, what?
It's amazing. It's amazing. Robin, you know, are you sick of Zoom meetings?
To be honest, if the alternative is to have to go somewhere, then no. I would take Zoom or Teams any day of the week. Have there been too many Zoom meetings because they're so easy and convenient to set up? I think, have taken the last 12 months here at AbilityNet to... double our delivery to clients, literally double our delivery. So we're very, very busy. We've been doing a lot of recruiting as well, because of the new, you know, really high priority focus on digital. And that's brilliant that we've been able to help organizations be, you know, undertake that journey, but do it in an inclusive way. But we've also, for whatever reason, decided to review all of our internal processes, practices, more kind of consistent across teams, revisit all of our tooling that we're using to collaborate internally, to report externally and all that sort of thing. So we've had loads of internal working groups as well. I'm on 4 different working groups that are looking at how we do things, and they all have Teams meetings weekly. So, you know, those are 4 additional team meetings plus loads of actions pre and post.
Oh, you're too corporate. That's just too much.
Oh, mate, honestly, this
is... Are you born in a suit?
So that plus all the client calls that I do and other delivery. So, you know, it's been a really hectic time. For me personally, though, I choose, and I'd really be interested to know other people's thoughts on this, but I choose never to turn my camera on unless it's, you know, I'm actually being someone who's delivering a presentation, a webinar, or whatever it might be. And that's always gone down fine. Sometimes I've said, oh, you know, I'm not camera ready, or you know, guys, I'm saving bandwidth. Sometimes I'll say, you know, I can't see, so I'm, you know, choosing just to keep my camera off. Hope you don't mind. But it's always gone down well. You know, there's never been too much pressure to actually put your camera on. And that means that, in effect, it's an audio Teams meeting. It's very different when the camera's on and you're having to be on your best behavior and remember not to, you know, scratch your ear or whatever it is, worse. And, you know, you always have to, you're kind of always conscious of the fact that you're on camera and you're not 100% sure what you look like or whether you're looking in the right direction or, you know. So that definitely adds a lot of kind of mental load to those meetings. But I always choose to not have the camera on unless it's absolutely necessary. And then, so then they're just audio meetings at the end of the day. And whilst they're draining and they create action points to take away and all that sort of thing, I would definitely choose that any day of the week to having to, you know, go somewhere. And I'm just hoping that that's not going to revert when everything gets back to some sort of normality, because I feel like, you know, it's upped our productivity quite considerably. It's a very much more efficient way of working. So in a way, I hope it doesn't go back to that. It could ease off slightly. That would be good. But yeah, I like it.
I think one of the biggest concerns I had is that I'm totally blind myself as well. And it's the angle of your laptop when you turn the camera on. Is that all right to port, like to show my face, or is something missing if I look, you know, how does it look to the people that actually see me in the camera on the other end of the meeting? Because they wouldn't say, oh, Madeline, you need to hold it slightly, this or that. I mean, they would if I know them well, but they wouldn't if I just join any meeting. So in the beginning, I thought, oh, don't turn your camera on. And then we heard of some people saying, oh, no, I actually want you to put the camera on because we want to make sure you are well. And I thought to myself, that's slightly different. I want to know, you know, I want to see the other person and I can't. Why do I have to put my camera on? And obviously working from home, if someone passes you something or some other things are going on in your background, it's all on camera. Uh-huh. I was very conscious of that in the beginning.
Yeah, so. I'm torn on this whole camera on, camera off thing. I'm a bit like you, Robin, I tend to keep the camera off until someone says, could you put your camera on? And then I kind of want to know why. I think it's interesting because you're right. I mean, it's in a work setting, often if your manager does it, and I tend to find on one-to-one meetings with my boss, I do actually like to put my camera on. Because she will then be able to see me. And I don't mind that in that one-to-one environment. But if there's a room full of people, I don't know necessarily what... I always think you have to get your room ready for camera.
No, same here.
You know, same here. You always think, hey, what is behind me here? Am I drying underwear behind me right now? What is going on? You know, this could be very embarrassing. Ben, where do you stand on the camera off, camera on?
I'm just thinking, can we have an audio-described track of... Stephen's background whenever he has his video on, and that might be quite interesting.
Dancing clowns.
No, I'm. Well, there have been worse things.
Yes, that's true.
Cats in courts and all this sort of thing.
Yep.
So yeah, my default position is to have it off because I just think, well, unless it's really needed, you know, there's no point. And if people want it on, they'll say, can you put your camera on? Or unless I know I'm in a situation where I'm presenting either to customers, you know, or somewhere where, you know, people will want to see you, then, you know, I'll keep it off. And sometimes it's just good to ask, you know, is the angle right? And I've often had people go, oh, just move it back a bit. No, it's too far. go forward a bit again. So it can be difficult to get that angle, especially when you have a laptop that you put away at the end of the day, because I started lockdown having my laptop always open. It just stayed where it was, and now because it's so, you just want a way of turning off. I just turn it off, shut it down, and put it away. Then it feels a bit more like I've left.
I also think it was a bit of it until you hear someone else doing the things you always dread would happen in your house. So until you hear another sort of child bursting in the room, or a cat meowing, or a dog barking, or something else going on in the background where you think, okay, this is normal, you don't need to worry so much.
But that's kind of expected now, isn't it? You know, to hear those things in the background, like I called a company the other day, and on the recorded message at the beginning, it was like, most of our agents are working from home, so you may hear unexpected noises in the background of your call.
I think
that's good.
I think it's useful to have a decent profile picture on all the platforms that you use, because then the default is just your initials, and I think that's probably not as appropriate. So if you've got a decent picture, then they're kind of seeing you anyway.
Yeah.
So it would have to be exceptional circumstances why they would want you to put your camera on. And most of the time, bandwidth, you know, can be an issue. We haven't all got fibre necessarily. So, but just on the laptop angle, you're right. Whenever you open your laptop, you know, it could be at a slightly different angle. But I've got a 15-inch MacBook here, and I use that for doing the webinars that I do. And they still actually want me to lower my seat, because even at the right angle, so that my head is in the middle of the kind of frame, you still kind of see up someone's nose a little bit. So you have to, they actually wanted me to lower my seat and angle the, you know, the lid of the laptop slightly a bit more vertical, and then you get a kind of a better framing. But so I don't know how bad that looking up people's noses is, as you know, an issue for people doing those. But
I don't think people are huge fans of looking up people's noses. I mean, I'm just guessing. But you know, it's interesting. I've seen so many people now, especially YouTube guys and especially people who present on webinars, you know, buying either really top end cameras to use as webcams. This is becoming a thing now. So you get people who buy Canon's like M50, which is about £600, or Sony ZV-1, which is the, you know, the kind of blogger camera. And these are like pretty high-end 4K cameras, right? And people are using those as webcams because it gives them a better presence. And I think for people in that position, it kind of makes sense, right? Because you're essentially presenting yourself as a professional. And if people are put off, like everything in life, you know, it just takes one thing to throw people off, right? If their first impression of you is, oh, that nose hair could do with a bit of a trim, then, you know, that's not probably the best way to approach it professionally. So I can see why people are doing that thing. On the laptop point, I have a tendency to work with my laptop lids closed. I've got the RNIB laptop here, and it just lives constantly closed because I can just sit there with my keyboard attached to it and work away. I prefer to use a full-size keyboard. So I sit there with that on, I've got my headphones on, and that's it. That's all I have. And it's always funny because someone will say, oh, your camera's not on. I was like, yeah, because my laptop's shut and on the floor. It's not even, you know, it's not even on the desk. So, you know, and I think it's a really interesting thing. And I do think it should be a personal choice. I think in some cases people are made to feel like it isn't. And that's wrong. I think it should be a personal choice. But yeah, it's interesting. I want to move on a bit because I think there's one area of this which I think will interest a lot of people, especially from your points of view, Madeline and Ben. And that is people who are not particularly techie, right? Because we're all techie here, right? So we got into this, we had issues. I mean, I certainly had a lot of issues getting around Microsoft Teams. I felt I had a crash course in it in a day. And suddenly it was like, how does this thing work? I mean, we had Microsoft Teams for a while, pre-pandemic. And I remember thinking, oh, it's one of those things I'll get to because I don't really need it right now. I'll get to it at some point. And then suddenly everyone's on Teams and we're at home and I'm thinking, I need to use this thing now. So I had to get my head around it. But what about those people who are not techie? You know, were you getting, and I'm maybe not even in the workplace, you know, I'm thinking even personally here, you must get calls, people saying, you know, I'm kind of nervous here because everybody's on Zoom. What is a Zoom? What does this thing do? How do I get on Zoom? I don't have a smartphone. I don't have this. You must get a lot of calls like that.
Definitely. You know, we get those calls all the time. And, you know, certainly at the start of the whole lockdown, they were coming in thick and fast. And, you know, it's some of us didn't have that expertise, so we quickly had to go and familiarize ourselves with it to be able to show customers. You know, some of them were like, I want to do it on my phone, or I want to do it on my computer, and then there was Teams to deal with, and we were trying to learn this stuff at the same time as well.
I think I had a few we also give partnership sessions, so with different organizations, and we have a few sessions where there are some people on there and they're like older than we are as well. And they are on Zooms all of a sudden or on Teams. And you think, wow, That's cool. I've seen you last year. You didn't use a device and now you are using Zooms. I think there were a few loads of questions. How can we access Zooms? Some people overcame that fear, contacted us. We sent them some information and some people asked relatives to help them initially and then worked out how to do it. I think there is a bit of a preference. Some people like it to use Zooms and Teams more on mobile phones, smartphones rather than on computers. But I think it's amazing to see how people adjust to use these new techniques.
It's definitely forced more people who weren't techie before to become, yeah, you know, tech safe. They were hesitant beforehand. This has kind of forced them to do it because they've had to, you know, to get that social interaction. Otherwise, they wouldn't have.
And that's
it.
Including 95-year-old so-and-so that never, ever wanted to know anything about technology on smart phones or tablets, and you hear them all of a sudden on Teams and you think, oh, that's interesting. So
yeah, I know you do. Yeah, and you know, I go back to the example of my mum, because she, you know, she did what she had to do with tech before. You know, she had emails on her phone, but she wasn't really that bothered about it. She still went into the bank to do her banking and things like that. And you know, a year after lockdown, she's doing online banking, so she's transferring whatever she needs to transfer, and she's doing you know, her choir Zoom sessions, and she's, you know, editing stuff in Dropbox and all wow. these small things. So I'm like, wow, that's quite a transition for
so,
her.
So you're saying that this has actually been a for a lot of people actually a real positive in terms of gaining knowledge of how technology can benefit them, almost showing what is possible.
Yeah,
definitely. It's just a shame, the timing, really, because the problem we've had is that there's been some people who want to do it, but they need that in-person support, and we haven't been able to provide that. You know, we've been able to do it over the phone, yes, but there's some people who are on their own. They don't have sort of anyone in their bubble who's confident enough to assist them with it. So, you know, it's been a struggle because we haven't been able to see them in person. And I know our volunteers, you know, who normally go out to people, they just want to get back out there again and help.
But we've
people,
had over
really.
The over the year, we've had so heartwarming, like really amazing examples, how far and beyond people go to support our customers. We've had one example I was involved in where a volunteer went to it was discussed and allowed, you know, went to the customer's house, stayed in front of the customer's house in their car, disinfected the laptop and the phone they wanted to look at, did what they have to do only to, you know, enable this customer to go back online and to attend Zooms and Teams meetings and things like that. And I think the sheer dedication and willingness to support and go a little bit out of their way, find new options and new ways to support those customers. I think this is sheer amazing.
Yeah, it fascinates me how resilient people are and how they get on with it. But I wonder if, and I don't mean to section us out as blind people here, but I do think sometimes we do have the desire to push further. I know that's a wild generalization in some ways, and some would say it's a positive generalization, but it still is a generalization, whatever way you look at it. Of course, there are people on both sides. Some people who would, you know, are going to be not getting in touch with you guys because they're just even terrified of the prospect of technology. And you've got other people who are just saying, do you know what? Just show me how this thing works. I need to keep in touch with my family. This is how I want to do it. I know I have to do it, so let's just do it. And I think that's the point, isn't it? That there are a real split between people, and there will be, I don't know how you would describe this, maybe a poverty around technology for a lot of people, especially blind people, perhaps, who just don't have the ability or even the technology itself, because that's the other thing, right? There's an assumption that we all have a laptop or an iPad or a phone. You know, have you ever had people get in touch who say, look, I don't have any of this stuff. How do I keep in touch with people?
Yeah, we did. I spoke to a customer the other day that had to support their child. And at some stage, they didn't got a laptop from school. And that was the only thing they had to go online and do schoolwork and also to do some work that he wanted to access. So, yeah, we do actually get customers that didn't have a lot of technology before and now need to completely reinvent their way of living and to possibly think, oh, maybe it would be good if I buy some of the smart technology after all. Yeah.
We've even had people who haven't had access to broadband before, and you know, this has pushed them to get that broadband access and, you know, start using the internet for various different things.
Robin, from your perspective, what has been, and you're a techie guy, right? So this is probably, you're further ahead of most people when it comes to this, but even so, when lockdown started, what was the one thing that you perhaps were maybe concerned about doing and then realized a year later, actually, do you know what? I've actually found this to be an achievement or a success that I didn't think would be possible.
I will answer that question, but just while I've got it in my head. So on the devices, you know, the kind of lack of people being able to afford the actual kit that they need to get online and do all the digital stuff that we're being expected to do these days, AbilityNet are part of the Good Things Foundation that have thousands of devices to give to disabled people. And we deal with all the ones that need adaptations. So it's a much bigger picture around not just disability, but people that, you know, can't afford to have those devices, are disadvantaged in various ways, and they provide kit to all of those people or to thousands of them.
How do people access that, Robin?
Well, if you call AbilityNet, so that's 0800 04 876 42, then have a chat with the team, and hopefully we can help there. And if you need, you know, special software and stuff putting on, then that's what we do in that area.
Let's remember to give that number again at the end, because we're also going to give the RNIB Technology for Life and the RNIB helpline number as well at the end. So, if, you know, grab a note taker, because we'll give you all these contact details again at the end.
So, I mean, for me personally, I was a little bit wary about not having enough eyes around, because in the office, you've got, you know, you would like, oh,
never
your
eyes
for a second. So, yeah, there was a lot of eyes around. I actually started to work from home a good deal before COVID struck, you know, sort of 4 or 5 years ago. So that was my kind of concern then. And it was a very real concern, because everyone was at work or at school, and it was a problem. So things like Be My Eyes, and particularly with the direct links to the, you know, Google and Microsoft disability answer desk, etc., were really, really helpful. Ironically, come COVID, all of that went away because the house was full of eyes, so that was fine. There were other challenges there around the levels of noise, which was why I actually left the office environment in the first place, because there were noisy people. So that was probably the biggest challenge for me during the day, is just, you know, keeping the noise down so that I can concentrate, or if I'm doing, you know, really kind of high stakes client calls, etc., where you need to keep that professionalism, you know, not have wife fronts drying behind you, but also not have people arguing in the background or whatever. Dogs is fine because you can't really do much about that, but when it's, you know, children and stuff, then that doesn't go down that well necessarily. So yeah, that was the kind of biggest thing for me. What have I learnt? I guess that, you know, there are lots of strategies that we can employ, like apps for remote support. I've become familiar with TeamViewer, etc., as you mentioned before. I've also learned that I don't like web-based apps. So the first thing that if you load Teams on the Mac, for example, the first thing that is spoken to you is WebView. And then your heart sinks because you think, oh, okay, it's one of these web apps that we know aren't as easy to get around. They might be accessible, but there is still a bit of a challenge there, particularly with the complexity that Teams, you know, has now. So out of Zoom and Teams, you know, Zoom is a native app and it just feels so much easier to deal with. But I think that's just something we're going to have to get to terms with. You know, I think there's a definite requirement, whether it's by the RNIB or by each individual employer, to really help those employees get to grip with Teams, because it's not going away. And it's only going to get more complicated because it's now an app platform, as we know. And, you know, soon you won't have an office calendar, you know, in Outlook or something. It'll be in Teams, or you won't have an office, you know, you won't have SharePoint anymore. It'll all be accessed through a channel in Teams, etc. So I think that's the shape of the future, and we kind of need to, you know, bite the bullet and get to grips with it. I think there's going to be a lot of training required.
And I think there's a lot of question marks over the future of something like Zoom as well, because long term, I remember when the news came of the vaccine, the shares in Zoom fell, because I think investors thought, oh, that's it then, it's finished. You know, the bubble has burst. Of course, that's continued to be successful for the short term. But, you know, how long can all these things go? We're seeing apps like Clubhouse come along, audio-based platforms, which give a lot of people a chance to connect and talk to each other in real time, which is great. But, you know, when we all get back to the office or normality resumes, I wonder what happens to that. And I think this leads me on to my next question, because loneliness and mental health issues have been the biggest topics coming out of this pandemic. And I wonder what your thoughts are. Madeline, I'll start with you on your thoughts on how technology can help, or has it hindered the process here when people who are lonely are looking for connection. Is technology helping or hindering that?
Well, if these people that are looking for any sort of family interaction, connection, know a bit about technology, then it's a support, and it's great to hear people, you know, over headphones and high quality audio for sighted, partially sighted people to see people on video calls. It hinders people that don't have the access to technology, you know, to have any interaction with family at all. So if there are people that still don't have the internet at home, are not willing to get the internet at the moment or any devices, then they have not seen their family for now a year, maybe a bit more than a year. So I think this is where it becomes difficult. For me, I think social interaction is one of the things where you can have a bit of an issue with too much technology use. Because people might say, especially younger ones, they want to have interaction with their peers. And that might be hours on end. Where you think, is it really healthy now, them sitting in front of this device so long? Mm-hmm. Is it good for their eyes? You know, things like this that normally you would see each other, you wouldn't have any technology using or enabling you to see each other. But now that's all you need to see each other, really. So, difficult one, but it has definitely more helped than hindered, I think, over the year.
Ben, what's your take?
I think it's definitely helped more than hindered. As Madeline said, you know, there are always going to be people who struggle with the technology, but there's been so many positives that have come out of it. You know, being able to speak to people you wouldn't otherwise be able to speak to, or get people together that you wouldn't, you know, be able to get together all at the same time. You know, I know that from sort of our personal experience in our team at Technology for Life, like, you know, we're spread all throughout the UK, and to get us all together in one room in person is very, very impossible, just because of the travel that's required for everyone and all that sort of thing. But we've been able to do that, you know, quite easily now. So I think there are definite advantages, but of course, you know, there are people who struggle with access to technology, and that is going to hinder them. But I do think that, you know, we will go to a more hybrid model once lockdown's finished. You know, there will be physical places where you can still go and physical meeting up, but it'll be, you know, a mixture of the two. You know, you'll have more of these conference rooms and meeting rooms set up so that you can have access to Zoom. So people who want to meet in person can be there, but people who want to join by Zoom can do that as well.
And that all sounds great on the work front, but I wonder on a personal level, once lockdown's over, people who have found ways to connect with each other, Robin, that then starts to go away because, you know, let's take Clubhouse, for example. Clubhouse, if you've not been on it, is an absolute mine of conversation and discussion on a whole wide range of topics. Very interesting people. A lot of blind people turned up on it because it's an audio-led platform. People go back to work. Suddenly that room and those rooms will start to become very bare. And the people who are left behind, those who aren't working, those who have relied on this as a source of comfort, are going to begin to lose out, aren't they?
Yeah, I think we've definitely got more channels now than we had before in ways to kind of reach out and communicate with people. I think it's yet to be seen how much of an exodus there will be from those platforms as people kind of return to normality of some shape or form. I don't think they'll go away. And, you know, they can be of great use. They can also be, you know, a time sink plus, you know, a real kind of mire. If you look in Clubhouse now, unless you've been very selective in what you said you were interested in, there's going to be a million get quick rooms open, get rich quick rooms open at any one time, and some other very slightly suspect looking conversations going on and stuff. So, you know, it's not going to be a kind of an completely unjaded experience. The thing that concerns me, though, is that, yes, we'll have this choice and we'll be, you know, interacting with colleagues potentially much further afield and, you know, in kind of more intimate ways now than we did before on just Slack or email or whatever it might be. You know, we're actually hearing and seeing the people if we can see them. But the physical side of things has definitely, or, you know, lack of physical contact has definitely taken its toll. And there are some people that are desperate to get back to the, you know, to meeting people face to face. A colleague of mine at AbilityNet who can't see, he told me back last summer, it's been 5 months since I touched someone. So, you know, that's got to take its toll. You know, he had lots of meetings and he's in contact with people, but, you know, that was at the height of when, you know, you really didn't want to go out. Obviously, you could get assistance at the supermarket and that sort of thing if you needed to, but he chose to go for the delivery option, which was probably the sensible and appropriate way to go. But, you know, to have not had any physical contact with someone for so long. So I hope all of that goes away and that people can, you know, meet people and have a hug and that sort of thing. Because this technology is great, but, you know, mental health is such a huge factor.
Okay, so so let's pick it up then a bit, because I wanted to bring us to this point because I want to ask you all the question about what we can do now, because we're still in lockdown, what we can do now to help our mental health, and how can technology help that?
I think it's really important to do the stuff that you enjoy. So to not forget, just because you are in lockdown, you know, you just have to do your work. There still has to be something that we have to do that we like. I really got into music when lockdown started. I needed something to distract myself. Now, I haven't picked up a guitar or a keyboard or singing or anything like that in 20 years. And I have, nursery rhymes and stuff, but not more. But before that, I was actually quite into music. And that was a way. I never knew really how to produce something like this on a computer. I didn't really have much to do with it. That was something that I started doing in lockdown, something just to get my teeth stuck in and some outlet, maybe something new. So something that you haven't thought possible, perhaps that you think, oh, you might as well be able to do something like this from home so that you can enjoy the time until we are going back to something what we might want to call semi-normal or normal or whatever, you know. But I think it's really important to keep doing the good things and to enjoy life and be happy about the things that work well in life.
Ben?
As little as they might be.
Ben, what's your take?
I was going to say, you know, use it as an opportunity to do things that you wouldn't normally be able to do. You know, for myself, I've tried to get into a bit more healthy cooking and things like that, because my excuse before was that, oh, I spent so long at work and I've travelled and things like that, but I haven't got that excuse anymore. So it's definitely an opportunity to do things that you used work as or whatever it might be as an excuse not to do, you know, so cooking or, you know, like Madeline said, you know, music, whatever it might be, just use it as an opportunity would be my motto.
Robin, anything you're doing now that you, where you learned Spanish or, you know, tried anything? Because that's what you hear on the telly, isn't it? People saying, oh, well, I know I've learned 15 languages and I've read 500 books. And you're thinking, yeah, I don't know how much time you've got.
I never read a book 5 months into lockdown. I didn't still read a book.
Oh, well, the amount of books I've read during lockdown, I mean, I was a big reader before, but
yeah.
Like, yeah, but those buy free extra credits on Audible. That's a bit of a killer to me, to be honest.
I mean, for me, I haven't necessarily, you know, started to learn an instrument or a new language or anything like that, but I've staved off the lockdown pounds piling on. So I feel quite pleased about that. And I've been using different workout skills on the Echo because they describe things. You know, it's a audio first platform. You can get ones where there are visuals for Echoes with a screen, you know, the Echo shows. But primarily, you know, the skills that you fire up, like the Body Coach by Joe Wicks, you know, they describe really well what the exercises are. I've been trying to improve my core strength because I wasn't sleeping that well. I would tend to have backache unless I changed my position a lot. And what I found out, thanks to my son, who's a qualified personal trainer, is that my core was shot, basically, from sitting at a desk for 22 years. I had no core strength whatsoever. And that had massive impact for me. So, you know, there is yoga stuff on the Echo. He gave me lots of stretches and strengthening exercises and stuff. So I've been kind of working on that. So I feel like people saying that, you know, things have gone to pot with regards fitness and stuff in the during the lockdowns has kind of perversely wanted me to do something about it so that I can, you know, I wouldn't be necessarily one of those people that would come out at the other end, you know, in really, really bad shape. So, yeah, that's kind of been my goal. But I think that my wife, for example, has been really enjoying Zoom things that she would never have, you know, she would never have joined online meetings before. She doesn't like the idea of being on camera. Most of the time she does have it still switched off. You know, cooking classes, Zumba classes, other dance classes, that sort of thing. So she's really got into that, and that's really, really brilliant. I really like that. And people just staying in touch, you know, with each other. WhatsApp group, you know, where you can join a group, or people have been creating groups left, right and center, it seems, during lockdown. And that's just a brilliant way of, you know, your interests, whatever they might be, there's probably going to be people that you can get together with in a WhatsApp group, and just those audio messages popping up and, you know, kind of that interaction in an asynchronous way, which means that you don't have to, you know, be there like with Clubhouse, you know, at that a particular time. You can just contribute your little voice message or your text message whenever you want to. So I would really recommend WhatsApp groups as well.
I am going to sound so negative here when I say this. I don't mean it to sound negative, but I remember when I got my music subscriptions through like the Echo, so I'd get Amazon Music or Apple Music, right? And I remember thinking, you know, as much as I have access to every single song that seems to ever exist via, you know, all these number of different platforms, I feel utterly bereft of music. Do you know what I mean by that? Where you have so much choice that you almost feel, I don't even know where to start. And, you know, with my CD collection, I would always know which CD I would want to listen to, and I knew the tracks on it I'd like, so I'd go to that CD and I'd play it. Whereas now I feel a bit bereft of all that. And I feel this a little bit like that. I'm feeling now, at this stage in lockdown, that I'm a bit like that with, and I put in inverted commas, friends in these virtual spaces.
Yeah, I think I'm a bit like that.
Choice. Well, that, but also just there's so many people, and it's like you say, you know, you talk to all these people, and that's great, but they're not your friends, right? They're people you know on these social platforms. They're not your friends, and the problem is, you know, those friendships, if you call them that, they will ebb and flows, right? It's like it comes and it goes, and you say hello, and you don't have any kind of. I guess my question is, how meaningful are these virtual friendships?
That's a really good, really good point, because yeah,
it's difficult.
With so many platforms, there's almost like a pressure to retain a presence in them, mm-hmm. and to be seen, and, you know, to contribute and that sort of thing. And that can actually have a detrimental effect on people's mental health as well. So you have to be careful, yeah, to kind of curate what you're involved in, and because otherwise you'll just feel overwhelmed and a bit.
If you're not
paralyzed
in the Clubhouse group, if you're not turning up in the rooms, if you're not, you know, responding to something on Twitter, suddenly you start to fade away and you become like a character in EastEnders that everyone forgets about. And, you know, suddenly, oh, are they still there? I thought they had been killed off. Oh, okay. It feels strange, Madeline. You seem to be on my side on this.
I do agree. I'm normally one that answers to WhatsApps and messages and what have you, like, quite in time. But if I join these groups, and oh yeah, I'm definitely in loads of groups as well, but then I think, oh, do you really want to listen to 2-3 hours worth of audio now? No.
It's too much.
It's like, when you're finished with this, it's bedtime. Really, do you want to do this? I probably think that, okay, you do it tomorrow. Oh, but you know what? Tomorrow, it's 6 hours of audio you've got to listen to. And do you really want to do that? So you delete them. And then people talk about things you can't follow anymore. Mm-hmm. So it's, yeah.
And then you get really engrossed in an audiobook and you'll be kind of off the radar for 3 days as you finish this, and then you go back and think, oh my goodness.
But I think that's different. I think there's something about a book is one thing, but I think this is different because there's a sense of you're part of a community and those people are your friends. And the problem is that in all of our cases, pretty much, and I'm speaking for me particularly here, you know, I've got my wife. And I saw a situation last week where my wife was talking to me about something. I said, hang on a minute, I just want to hear this bit on Clubhouse. And I had to stop myself because I'm thinking, hang on a minute, who's more important here? What's the relationship that's really important here?
This is it. You can forget your relationship sometimes if you're really engrossed into one. Yeah, I agree.
You have to feel like you have to keep up. You know, I've been added to so many groups, as I think we all have. And, you know, the message are just piling up and I'm like, no, I'll just leave that now because I'm going to completely not be able to catch up on that. And I just end up leaving the groups in the end because I just can't contribute.
I agree, definitely.
The trouble with Clubhouse, oh, sorry, go on.
I think they are friends and then they are those acquaintances that we have on social media, isn't it? But could we really call them up at 3 a.m. in the morning if something was to go wrong?
Exactly.
You know? That's the real test, isn't
it? That's right. That's right.
For me, the problem with Clubhouse is that you can't pause it.
No.
So there's been times when I've been listening to something, doing the washing up or something, and Judith asks me a question. I go to pause it and I can't. So I have to, I'm usually listening on my Bose frames and I have to put them up on top of my head so that I can hear what she's saying.
And I've had that conversation. My wife will say, what's more important to you here? You know, I actually find I'm having, at this point in time, I'm having one of those dilemmas where I feel I need a social media break. And I wonder if a lot of us coming out of lockdown, one of the best things we can do is just take a couple of weeks off social media. You know, I mean, I actually put on I haven't done this for a while, just sat the other night and put a film on. My wife went to bed early and I just put a film on and I turned my phone off. And I don't do that very often.
Do not disturb is a great setting.
Well, yeah, but I still feel things get through on that. So I thought, do you know what? I'm just going to turn this thing off. I can live without this. I'm an adult, okay? I'll manage. And I really was able to engross myself in this movie and I really enjoyed it. And it was nice to laugh about things because I'll another side of this, now I'm maybe making this very personal, but I feel at the moment anyway, you know, when you go on social media, especially today, the conversation is very heavy. In some cases, it's quite toxic. Social media is like that in lots of different ways. And so you can feel dragged into situations that you really, you know, you just went on to check, you know, what people are saying about X, Y, or Z. I'm a tech guy, so I'm always looking to know what the latest tech thing is or when's the next Apple event or whatever. But, you know, it's not that I'm seeing. It's a lot of people who I think are struggling, who are dealing with their anxieties by, you know, letting it all out online and attacking each other. And that seems to be the way it's going. And I'm just very worried about that. Because I think I can't be around this. This isn't good for me. So I think we've got to be mindful of ourselves. And well-being is key here. We said this for long enough. Since the beginning of lockdown, we talked about well-being. And, you know, that can affect lots of people in different ways. You know, the impact of loneliness, the impact of being on your own, the impact of social media, all these things can have these impacts. But I think it's also knowing when to say enough is enough. And for me, I think that's the key. It's like, I'm going to have to walk away from it for a while just to kind of go, there is a nicer world out there and it is okay.
It's difficult to know what that point is though. And, you know, did you, when you had your phone turned off, I know I've tried doing that a few times, turning my phone off. Did you get that thing where your hand automatically goes to your phone and it's either not there or you're like, no, I'm not doing it? Because I get that. It's like an instinctive reaction just to reach for my phone. Like I'm watching the TV and the advert break comes on, so I automatically reach for my phone. to scroll through Facebook or Clubhouse or whatever it might be.
And you wonder why, right? You do. You sit there and you're going through it. I mean, I heard someone saying this once, and it was a comedian was saying it, and it made me laugh because it's so true. He said, most of us, when we wake up to go to the toilet in the middle of the night, do one of two things. We either check Facebook first or we take the phone with us.
I'm guilty of both, I've got to say.
And it's so quite
true. I had to stop myself from browsing Facebook in the middle of the night because it wound me up, and I thought, oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
For me, if I go out of the house, I can tell that my back right pocket hasn't got the phone in it.
Wow.
You know, my bottom knows that feeling.
That's quite specific.
No, I definitely get that. You leave the house and you're like, I've forgotten something.
I think that's, I guess, you know, as we come to the end of our hour, I wonder, you know, going forward, there are going to be positives out of this. I mean, we didn't really get much of a chance to talk about events, but, you know, I think events is a big area here. A lot of events for blind people have been virtual, like all events have. And I think that's a positive to some degree. I mean, I think if you're buying a Braille display, you probably need to touch it, right? So, you know, that's the problem, that if you go into a product exhibition virtually that involves them telling you about something, that's not going to work, is it? You need to get your hands on. So that's one thing. But I think, as you said, Ben, I think the hybrid model's the key. Because, you know, for a lot of people, they may never be able to attend CSUN in America.
No.
And they might want to. So we should have the option to do these things virtually, but also have the option to turn up as well. And so I think that's a positive. But we've touched on something really important here. And I think this is the negative part of it, that is we are very dependent on our devices anyway. And I just fear that as we have gone into lockdown, people have just sunk into their devices even more. And actually, we live virtual lives now. We live virtual lives and we live our public lives or our personal lives, however you want to characterize it. But we actually live two lives. We have our online persona and we have our own, you know, family persona. And that's an issue because that's been more entrenched. And for those people who live alone, who've gone through this whole thing, and I know friends of mine who've done this, you know, who've gone through this whole experience living on their own, you know, they're consumed by their devices because that's the only communication method they have. So as much as it's a great thing that at least we're able to communicate, we're coming out of this where, you know, the world is all on our screens. And is that a good thing? I mean, I can see the benefits and the negatives here.
But maybe this is a good thing because you can choose if you live with people. Right now, you can choose how much involved you want to be in all this and how much you don't want to be involved in this. And I don't see that I'm a different person online than I would be if you would meet me face to face. At least I don't want to think about this as this myself. But yeah, if you're living on your own, you probably might anyway go out a lot more, or maybe having had not much conversations and communication before, for them that might be a godsend.
Well, I know that because, you know, I live on my own and before lockdown, you know, I would, you know, go to a friend's house for, you know, a cup of tea or, you'd just pop in. You know, any opportunity you had for that, you know, social face-to-face interaction you would get. And, you know, I'm kind of missing that at the moment because it's a bit solitary, you know, being sat here and sort of no one else around who you can just have a spontaneous conversation with. To do that, you have to actively go and look for that conversation, whether it be on Clubhouse or, and then, you know, you kind of get stuck in there and you're like, you know, what's the etiquette for leaving? And, you know, because we're all used to, you know, the social etiquette when you're with someone face to face of, you know, how you can sort of politely leave. But, you know, it's a whole new thing on the virtual platforms.
Okay, final question to all three of you. Just a very short answer, if that's okay. Are you looking forward to lockdown ending, Madeline?
In the majority of ways, yes. And in some ways, I'm also a little bit hesitant how this is all going to pan out.
Ben?
Definitely. There's lots of things I just can't wait to get and do again.
Robin?
No, I'm quite happy not going to meetings IRL. in real life. I'm so sorry. I hope it ends for everybody else, but I don't want to have to go into London ever again. Sorry, London.
Do you know what I love about that? All three of you came up with very different answers to that question. That's absolutely, yeah. That sounds really interesting. I mean, you would expect, because the obvious expectation is you'd say, of course, I'm desperate for this all to end so that I can do X, Y, Z. And yes, you're all saying that to some degree because, you know, it's in some ways, I'm going to guess that for all four of us, it's not the work part that we're actually that bothered about. It's the social side. It's the friendships.
To go to the gym. Yeah. That's one thing.
Just go for a coffee with a friend.
Definitely this.
In real life.
Definitely the social.
Not a phone.
Yeah.
But I'm a bit strange. I do want to get back to that work thing. I actually want to go to London and, you know, meet colleagues and this, that and the other. So, yeah, Robin's probably sat there thinking.
I'll send you if I ever need to go. Thanks.
There you go. That's it. Sorted out.
I don't mind the London and going into London because I can do this on my own. I know how to do this. But if I think about a situation that something might go wrong, I don't know, and I need to speak to any other member of the public, I'm thinking, like, how will they react then? Will they still be hesitant to help or, you know?
That's a huge conversation. Yeah,
I know. Probably for another day. But this is. But these are the kind of things where it makes me think, I don't need to think about this now because I'm fine where I am.
Guys, it's been great. Let's just quickly run through the numbers and details again for those who want to get involved or get in touch with you, in particular at the Technology for Life team. Ben, you tell us how people can get involved.
Yep, so you can get in touch with us via the RNIB helpline. Our Technology for Life service is available Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. and you can reach us by phone 03 03 123 9999. That's 03 03 123 9999. You can also email tfl@rnib.org.uk. We also have lots of fact sheets available. So you go to our website, rnib.org.uk/technology.
And for people who want to find out more about that project you were talking about earlier, Robin, for people who, you know, don't have much money but need access to technology itself, tell us about that project again and how people can access it.
Yes, it's the Good Things Foundation, and we are the kind of disability and special customization element of that. So if you are interested, you can either email inquiries@abilitynet.org.uk or you can call the ANI Advice and Information Team on 0800 04 876 42. And our website has got loads of information about technology as well.
Madeline Bloom, Ben Rendell and Robin Christofferson, as always, thank you guys for being with me on Tech Talk this week.
Thank you for having us. Thank you.
Thank you.